Blog Talk Radio.
Monday evening, Coffee Party Radio listeners, and welcome to another installment of Speaking of America. I'm your host tonight, Don Manning, and I'd like to invite you to hang in there with us tonight for the next 2 hours or less and share with us in the conversation. Whatever you want to talk about tonight is pretty much the way we're going to go. We've got no guests. We're going open forum style. Maybe you want to talk about the upcoming debate, what you expect from that. How much is anything going to take the debate in a direction? Is it going to be the economy? Is it going to be about that subject that Romney likes to talk about so much, the war? Is it going to be a bunch of singers? I heard today maybe Mitt would have a few jokes for us, show us he's a regular guy and loosen us up there in the first debate. Expectations from all the camps seem to be kind of lukewarm, kind of a strategic move. So anything better than average looks good, unless you listen to Chris Christie, who's big on Romney just really tearing it up, and that Thursday morning it's going to be a whole new ball game. And that's probably true. Just don't know who's going to be victorious at that point. And I suppose time will tell. And as far as victorious goes, that's one of three debates, so who knows. But how it goes here on Speaking of America and on this particular program, brought to you commercial-free by Coffee Party USA, we let you call in. We let you comment. We let you throw a subject out there. Maybe you've got a question. Maybe you just got a statement. Hopefully not much of a speech. But whatever you do, we'd like you to keep it civil, if at all possible. And not that I do it a lot, but if it does get a tad bit Glenn Beckish or Rush Limbaugh out, hardcore talk radio, throwing verbal rocks at people that aren't on air to defend themselves, we may have to push the button on you. But I've only done that two or three times, and I think we've been on now for about 6 months. So I know we've got lots of regular listeners across the United States, and I think that tonight would be a good night if you have some news you'd like to bring us from your part of the country. I know we've got a regular listener in Florida, Neil. We were talking about voter registration. Seems to be a lot going on with that in the news here lately. All the squawking about voter fraud and tightening up the security for that, and people as myself saying, where's the fraud? Where's the beef? Let's see it. Well, it looks like they found some, and it is in the form of a company hired by the GOP to conduct some of this voter registration. So from what I hear, that company operating in about five of the swing states, they are sent packing. They've been sent packing. They're canned. A lot of money spent on these guys and gals, and evidently, trying to trying to thwart a little bit of the registration numbers, slant it to the GOP way. Been some, you know, hidden tapes that are coming up. Somebody had a answer machine record a telephone operative's conversation, just their side of it, with evidently an elderly person on the other line, and telling them that, you know, they need to watch Fox News and watch the movie 2016 and Obama's a Muslim, et cetera, et cetera. So a lot going on out there. You know, it's really getting shifty. We're getting down to the final table at the big poker playoff. And, you know, who knows who's holding the lock hand and who's bluffing. We're going to find out here over the next few weeks, I imagine. If you're listening in on your computer and you would like to call in tonight, I would like you to call in tonight. I don't want to talk for 2 hours. Let's hear from you. You can call in at 646-929-2495 and then push the number 1 to let me know that you want to be on the air and you've got something to say. And don't be bashful. It's not that tough. You just talk into the phone like you're having a regular phone conversation. Just so happens that there are hundreds and possibly thousands listening. A little bit of commercials, I guess, but plugs. We are brought to you by Coffee Party USA. And if you don't know what Coffee Party is all about, then you need to check us out. CoffeePartyUSA.com.org. I think they'll all get you to the site. And look into what we're all about. You know, basically in our mission statement, don't want to be riparian, forget the three things, but I believe it's campaign finance reform and Wall Street and bank reform, and get rid of the lobbying movement and our government for sale as it is. Your thoughts, as I said, on the upcoming debate and what you think is going to take place. What are you going to be looking for? Are you looking for a shutout from President Obama? Do you think that Mitt has some game and he's going to come to the party as he seemed to do during the primaries with all the other candidates up there? And keep in mind that, you know, those primary debates with the Republicans, that stage was pretty full. And the amount of time that that Governor Romney got to speak was a lot less than, you know, what he's going to have going on in this debate come Wednesday. So, and I guess that first one is down there in Denver, and I'm wondering if our own Jessica English might not be covering that, or maybe Eric. They're down in Denver last time I knew, so be nice to know if we were going to have some coverage there. I see someone's been busy and got some clips, some sound audio clips put into our studio, and among those I see some stuff from Jesse LaGreca, and I wonder if this might not be from our event, Enough is Enough, back in this time last year in Washington, D.C., when it was all very chilly. And I tell you, Jesse LaGreca, if you don't know who he is, Google him and look at some of the videos that you'll find on YouTube. He's fairly famous, infamous, or well-known for standing up a Fox News reporter some time back in regards to Occupy. And I want to play with this soundboard anyway, so I'm going to go ahead and take a chance that this is some good stuff here. And I'm going to play these two clips that I see, these two audio clips that we have here on our board. So if everything goes well, this should be Jesse LaGreca here, and I think maybe Washington, D.C. of last October.
Hey, mic check. So if you guys know the rules, the way it works is if you hear something you like, fingers in the air, okay? I'd like to just state that it's an incredible honor to me to be here. You know, I, as many, have been under the thumb of just this impressible greed. I mean, myself, I've been looking for work. I've been a restaurant manager. I've been writing for years. But, you know, I was facing homelessness 2 months ago because I have no idea how to pay my bills. And I think a lot of people fall into that group. You know, where a lot of people are suffering, and it's honest. It's suffering, and you can't be denied. And the rain may, you know, weigh us down, but it can't take our voices away. But more importantly, I'd like to talk today about honesty and dishonesty, because I think that our debates need to be honest for us to come to the conclusions that we need to strive for to solve these complex problems. So it's an honest debate to state that the mass majority of people in America have had their wages suppressed over the last 30 years, while the incomes for the wealthiest members of society have just skyrocketed. It's an honest debate to say that people who are denied health insurance can't contribute to our economy because they're just having their lifeblood ripped out of their pockets. They can't fund their education for their children because they're too busy paying bank fees and high insurance premiums. It's an honest debate to say that people are suffering, and it's the role of our government to address that suffering. Now, it's a dishonest debate to continue to state that tax cuts for the rich are the answer for everything that's wrong. That when the economy is soaring, tax cuts for the rich are the answer. When the economy is crashing, tax cuts for the rich are the answer. It's a dishonest debate. It's an honest debate to say that the people who have the most ability to invest in America should invest in America. They call it taxes. I call it investment. And I'm more than glad to have my tax money go to invest in our education, to invest in first world infrastructure, to invest in a sane health insurance industry, one that does not profit off of people suffering, but provides the preventative care that allows us to be the consumers that drive this economy. Don't have time for the next legislative session to answer our problems. We don't have time to wait for the next election so that they can bribe us with platitudes and then serve the wealthiest 1% when they're in office. One side filibusters on behalf of the rich, and the other side caves. And we don't have the time for it. And that's why we occupy. Now, you know, people in the media like to ask me two questions. They ask, what are your demands and how does this end? And to me, that says that they want us to make demands so that this can end. Our problems are not going away easily. When people ask me, how are you going to get through the winter, I say, you know, our problems will remain after the winter. When people ask me, what are your goals? It's such an obvious answer. We want good jobs with good pay and benefits. We want all the promises that you made to our parents that our grandparents fought and died for. We want those promises to be held. We want our Social Security to pay for our parents' retirement, not to fatten the bottom line of some Wall Street CEO who would love to just take that money and hoard it. You know, if they wanted to make a reality show called Hoarders, they should come down to Wall Street. I think they would get a really good idea what's going on down there. But the reality is, whether it rains or snows, whether the winter's cold or our southern brothers and sisters are warm, whatever the weather is, you know in your heart whether you have a warm heart or a cold heart. And to the cold-hearted people who don't discuss families, who don't discuss consumers or workers, they only care about one thing, corporate persons. And to me, if you wanted to describe a corporate person, I like to call it a vampire. It's something that never dies and lives off of blood. I'm here for human beings. I'm here for people. We should put people before profit. Our democracy should be representative of we the people, not we the corporations. And anybody who would like to defy that is standing on the opposite side of justice, and history will judge them duly and accordingly. But more to the point, It's about community. To me, Occupy Wall Street is about community. It's about building bonds. It's about being inclusive. It's not about tearing people down. You know, it's an honest debate to occupy a public area and have a peaceful discussion about the future of our nation.
Yeah, and that was Jesse LaCraica from the Enough is Enough rally. I'm almost positive of it, especially as references to the cold and the rain, and we had a little bit of everything, snow, sleet, space heater, fire, blowout, really miserable outside conditions, but persevered, and a lot of people got to speak there, including Jessica English, who had sold soup, I think it was, to back home in Minnesota to get money together to come to D.C. to speak. Later, we moved down to a restaurant and bar that had some heat, and the rest of us sooner or later got to speak there, and everything was videoed. I don't know that all of those, all of the people that spoke are online, but I know a lot of them are on YouTube, and there were some pretty profound things said from people from all walks of life, really. I remember talking with people that had driven, you know, over 1,000 miles in winter conditions. Myself and others, you know, flew great distances. I from Seattle to D.C., I talked with people from all over Texas, Wisconsin, California, Nevada, Louisiana, Florida, you name it. It was a great event. And I think that's what it's all about. And if you can hear the fire in the belly, so to speak, of a guy like Jesse LaCraica, you know, there's people like him all over, you know, men and women, and maybe they're not as good with the, you know, speaking from the heart without a written speech or the good old teleprompter, but they still are on the same page. They've got the same feelings and the same wishes and dreams for our future and what we're going to do with this country we have. Where are we going to take this? These are some definitely tumultuous times. We seem to have come to a point where the two sides, so to speak, in our two-party system, and yeah, we've got the independents and libertarians and green parties and all that, but I mean, basically, you know, realistically, you know, at this point anyway, a two-party system of electable candidates in these higher offices, including, you know, most importantly here in the next month, the presidency. What are your thoughts? I want to hear from you. Like I said, I'm not going to filibuster on the program tonight for another hour and 44 minutes. So you're going to have to rescue us here and give us your 2 cents worth, or throw the ball out on the court, and let's see what you want to talk about. And again, the number 646-929-2495. And you know, what's your thoughts? Like I said, what are you expecting to happen? Is this debate going to be more fiery, more important, more entertaining than Obama McCain? You know, the one thing I remember sticking out in my mind from that was when McCain turned at one point and referred to Obama as that one. Yeah, I remember that got a lot of people fired up. And of course, there was walking into camera shots and whatnot too, that Senator McCain kind of made himself look as though he didn't know exactly where the cameras were at, or maybe that was all part of his plan. I don't know, to walk into Obama's shot, but I think we're going to have a couple of more kind of refined characters in front of that camera here Wednesday night, and I think it's going to be interesting. You know, so many things have happened in the course of this campaign, especially on the Republican side. You know, we talked earlier about the voter registration fiasco that's going on, and a lot of people, including myself, would get on the bandwagon of, hey, I told you so. If you remember, you know, we went through the deal back last election cycle with Acorn, and they eventually had to fold their tent and call it a day. You know, they're no longer in operation as far as I know. But the difference there is Acorn blew the whistle on themselves when they found out improprieties. So, you know, a little bit different scenario there. Ah, someone to the rescue, and area code 714 wants to end my filibuster. So we're going to go to area code 714, and I think I know who this is, but who is it, and where are you calling from?
Hi, Don. It's Debbie again from Huntington Beach.
Oh, hey, Debbie. You know, we didn't get to talk with you all that long a time last week. What's on your mind? What's on your mind tonight?
Well, let's see. You're asking about the Recovery and Reinvestment Act.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, everything. What do you think? Do you think that? Do you think that worked?
I think it could have been bigger, and that.
Mm-hmm.
I think where it's messed up is that you got to have public workers with private workers. One or the other isn't going to do it, you know.
Agreed.
And they just keep laying off more public workers.
Mm-hmm. And to what end? I mean,
I don't know
why, but... Yeah, why do you think they're doing that? Are they doing that to make them the scapegoat to help you know, fatten the bottom line without having to go to you know, the drawing board on taxes, as a lot of progressives and the Democrats want to do?
Well, I think it's because they all got together as soon as President Obama was elected and decided they would try to unelect him. Right off the bat.
That's a true fact. I mean that.
So it's really the Congress, and when they got in there in 2010, they kind of smashed the hopes of anybody getting any more stimulus in there, you know.
Mm-hmm. Well, with 2010 and the kind of like the Tea Party, you know, revolution or the takeover of course the House.
Yeah.
Well, you know,
Dems were apathetic, I think, that year.
They were, and I saw it coming. I didn't really think that it was going to be as bad as it was, but I think maybe you know, but I think the number was something like 60 or 50 or 60 seats that the Dems lost in the House to, you know, take it over to, you know, the Republican control, Republican and Tea Party control that they have now. A little off this subject, but did you see where evidently Eric Cantor and his opponent, Powell, I think he's a retired colonel, military colonel.
Yeah.
Did you see where they had their debate? I think maybe it was today or the last part of.
Parts of it, snippets. I didn't see the whole debate.
Yeah, evidently, you know, this Cantor seat may be in play.
I hope so. I really mm-hmm. don't like him.
Yeah, you know,
he's just
try.
The little devil who stands behind Boehner. You know what I mean?
Well,
that's what he reminds me of. Just
yeah,
this
you don't
little
think he wants...
evil man behind Boehner or something.
Yeah, always got that little smile on his face, and you know he'd love to get a hold of that big gavel. That's what he wants.
Yep, you can tell.
Yeah. Oh, he wants to
just
be
by
speaker
looking at him.
So bad. He wants to be speaker so bad.
And then
I know
Paul Ryan. He's just as bad.
Yeah, and there's
opinion.
another there's another, you know, little group of tidbits floating around there that, you know, he could be on the losing presidential, vice presidential ticket, and also lose his
yes.
day job. You know, so Romney,
wouldn't it
you know,
be wonderful?
Well, you know, I'm not. I don't want to start high-fiving or breaking out the champagne, but, you know, it, just like in the last game of the World Series, you want to at least have some in the refrigerator, you know,
yeah.
because the cameras are going to be on you in a hurry, and you want to make sure you got plenty of bubbly to throw around. But if you're the winner, you know, if you're the loser, you're just going to take that stuff around back and drink it, you know, by yourself. But they're starting to kind of, you know, bring out the comments that Romney and his perceived campaign, the shape it's in, is dragging the rest of the ticket
of the party down or something
yeah,
like
you
that.
Know,
they're
the,
trying to blame it all on Romney now.
Yeah, yeah, and
like
you know,
their
you,
philosophy
you,
doesn't suck.
Yeah,
you know.
Yeah, exactly. You know, I did watch. Speaking of debates, I saw a few snippets of Brown and Warren, Elizabeth Warren.
Yes,
and,
I saw that too.
You know, and Brown just you know he won't attach himself wholeheartedly to Romney at all. You know, he's trying to make himself out to be like some kind of middle of the roader. You know that I vote Democrat with the Democrats, sometimes I vote with the Republicans. You
I
know,
saw that, and you could just see Elizabeth Warren's face like, oh please.
Oh yeah, for sure.
You know,
for sure. Yeah,
I like
it's
Warren.
Well, she makes a lot of sense, and you know, it's got to open people's eyes. I mean, you know, I don't want to see us go into like a one party rule,
right?
But I also don't want to see one of the parties be essentially hijacked by an extreme left or extreme right
agenda,
minority,
yeah.
And that's what I've seen happen to the Republican Party, and you know it's not a secret. A lot of people. You know, say the same thing. And I've got friends that, you know, are Republicans, and they're kind of like, you know, they kind of walk around like somebody ran over their dog. You know, I mean, they just don't want to talk about it.
I've got a few friends that are Republicans that are voting Democrat this time.
Yeah, and I'm glad you brought that up because I've heard that too, but yet I haven't heard much in the line of Democrats voting Republican. So you know, there's another.
Well, just with a philosophy of a Democrat, it makes you mm-hmm. sick to watch all that stuff. You
oh,
know,
yeah.
The oppression of women and the bigoted comments they make and stuff like that. That's just not the way we roll.
Right. And you know when I hear some of that, and we've talked about it a lot on the various programs on the Coffee Party Radio, I know. But when I hear some of that that's going on, I'm just like going, how are people, you know, how do they make this much Kool-Aid, you know, that people are drinking this stuff and buying into this narrative, you know, why do we need to here in the 21st century? Why do we need to be having the Lilly Ledbetter Act? You know, why is that necessary? Why are we having all this dialogue and all this controversy and stuff about, you know, women's health and legitimate rape? You know, this Todd Akin guy, you
yeah.
know, first everybody threw rocks at this guy, and then he hung in there past 0 hour. So now they're all going to get back on board. It's just like, you know, everybody's got amnesia, and
yep.
You know, this guy, he didn't misspeak. If you watch videos of him at different events and the things he says, this is how this guy feels.
He thinks Medicare is a total communist, I think.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, it's amazing how, you know, communism, socialism, fascism, those, you know, every once in a while you get somebody to throw all three of those things in the same sentence, you know. It's just astounding to see what is out here coming out of the mouths of people that have been elected to serve, you know, their constituents. What are we doing?
I said this to my son the other day, and you know, Obama's not really that liberal.
No.
If you look at some of the policies he's had. So I don't see why they're so down on him. He's been compromising this whole time that he had to, especially after 2010.
Right.
You know, and my son calls him a moderate Republican. That's
mm-hmm.
how far away
that.
He is from, you know, my
right.
son's views.
Well, I tell you what, I'll take a moderate Republican compared to what they put up on that stage a few months back to select a candidate from.
Yeah.
The only one up there that I felt at the time could even come close to getting my consideration to vote for was John
Huntsman. Eliminated
him.
Yep, me too.
Yeah,
they
didn't give him the time of day. Another guy that never could get any traction, they kept moving the goalposts on him, was old Buddy Romer, you know, who I met back in D.C., and I didn't agree with him on everything. But he sure was down on money and politics. He didn't want to take any more than $100 from anybody for a donation. And, you know, he'd been a state representative, a senator, a governor. He'd been a banker, his banks during the...
They wouldn't even let him debate, would they?
No, they wouldn't. They kept changing things. You told him, you have to get a certain percentage of the vote, I think it was, in the primary or something, which he did one time. Oh, no, then you had to raise so much money in a certain amount of time. They did not want him on the stage to muddy the waters. Yeah, which was really too bad because you had some people up there that just you knew weren't going to have a chance of getting a nomination. And I'm thinking of right off the top, Bachman and Kane. You know, they just absolutely would have been slaughtered in a regular election. You know, against Obama.
I don't know how Bachman won a seat anyway, but that's okay. That's just my thought.
Yeah, more than once. She's another one that could be in peril with her seat. But evidently, in you know, a lot of what happened when they got the Tea Party injection, you know, they had a lot of redistricting, you know, being done too to kind of pad the deck for these representatives, you know, next time around. So, you know, it could be tough, but, you know, there's a number of things I think we need to do to clean up our election process. And, you know, one of them is to get all these outside money sources, you know, disconnected from it. You know, Citizens United needs to be repealed. You know, if we need to have an amendment, which a lot of us think we do, you know, to establish, you know, firmly and once and for all that money's not speech and that, you know, corporations, unions, whatever, are not people. And, you know, as soon as we can unravel that mess that's been going on for over 100 years, that'd be a step in the right direction, too. I will say that I'm kind of proud of the Americans that have reached into their pocket for $5, $10, $20, $100, whatever, and are kind of holding their own in campaign financing against a lot of these super PACs from the right. And I understand that there are a couple that are in support of Obama, but nothing like what's behind the Republicans.
I don't think Obama's taking really large donations, really. There's a few people, but he'll tell you who they are.
Right,
he's
right.
Not,
I heard that.
He's not hiding it. And his super PACs, you know who are responsible for those.
Right. And, you know, he's got some people that, you know, because of the fact that they don't necessarily get to be public in their big donations, they've kind of throttled back. I read someplace that, you know, George Soros, you know, cut his donations back to, you know, several hundred thousand rather than, you know, several million.
Yep.
So, you know, but then on the other hand, you've got this this Adelson, I think his name is, the tycoon
casino
owner.
Yeah.
This guy's going to just, you know, unleash the credit cards. I mean, he's prepared to spend, you know, like $100 million or something. I heard some goofy number. I mean, this is a guy that, you know, you talk about a gambler. He bet $10 million on Newt Gingrich, and that didn't work out too good. So he's going to spend even more now. I mean, it's crazy.
You know what? All he's thinking about is that Adelson guy is, what can I do before I die?
Yeah, to save my estate some taxes. Yeah, and as you know, leave his family in as much of a tax free situation as possible. But yeah, that's very possible. But you know, I think he's like in Romney and any of the other 2 percenters or 1 percenter or 0.5 percenters, depending on where they fall in the financial strata.
I think they're about 0.5 percenters or even less than that.
They really do want to see less taxes. You know, they want tax reform. They're all about this we're the job creator thing. We need to inject this into the economy. You know, they've got so many people, drinking the Kool-Aid and sitting in front of the propaganda machine. They're buying this. And you know, we've got to educate them. They need to be informed. This is not how it works. It's just
right.
Insane.
Well, they need to be informed that our votes can't be bought.
That's for sure. Yeah. And
I think that it's going to happen this election. I'm hoping some of that will come through to them. You know, I give to Obama. And I gave to Elizabeth Warren, too.
I've tossed a 5, a 10, a 20 here and there, and then I'll say it. I mean, I don't think anybody that's listened to me on this program thinks I'm sending much in the way of cash to the GOP side. I sent some money to the Democratic Congressional Campaign Committee, let them spread it around, you know, wherever they need to use it. Because
Obama, he can't afford to, like, give them the money he's got to run with.
Right, right.
So
yeah,
they're like all on their own.
Yeah, this last month they're just going to unleash the television ads and whatnot, and it's going to be interesting to see what kind of ammunition is going to come from the debates, you know, for either side to use, really, because this is definitely the era of the soundbite. I mean, you know, these hidden videos. Or videos that have been buried in an archive in a newsroom someplace that they dig up and, you know, come back to haunt these guys with. It's just amazing. Debbie, hang on there. I just want to give our number out again. Anybody that's listening want to get in on the conversation, Debbie in Huntington Beach and myself, we're just talking about this, that, and everything right now. But if you'd like to take part in the conversation or you have a subject that you want to toss out there, give us a call. 646 is the area code, 929-2495, and then push the number 1. Let me know you want to get on the air. Now, the debate's in Denver, this first one, right?
Yep.
Is that right? Okay.
Yes.
And it's, you know, I didn't even see the time, but I would imagine it's probably West Coast-wise, it's probably like 5 or 6 or so.
5,
you know?
I think, West Coast. I think it starts at 8. 7 or 8 in Colorado, so that would be 5 here.
Okay,
we're 2 hours out, right?
One or two, I'm not sure. Maybe Eric or Jessica, somebody in Denver, will pop in and let us know on that. Of course, we can check it out, I guess.
It might be 6 o'clock here, I'm not sure.
Okay, Yeah, well, that's going to, I think that's going to draw a crowd. I think a lot of people are going to be dialed into that one. And I think there's it's either the start of a possible rally for Mitt, or it's going to be the funeral march, because
I don't think Obama will make that many gaffes.
Yeah, you know, he's pretty methodical, and he's pretty...
he thinks on his feet pretty well.
Yeah, he doesn't rattle. His style kind of reminds me of a lawyer friend of mine, you know, that I was a witness in a trial once, and it had nothing to do with me, but I witnessed a crime, and this lawyer friend of mine gave me some advice. He said, you don't let the defense attorney get control of the rhythm of his questioning.
Right.
And he said, so what you want to do is when they ask you a question in your head, count to three before you answer it. And he said, it's going to drive them nuts. You're visibly going to see them get agitated. But do that, you know, because they're going to try to ask you things, you know, one after another at some point, probably to get you to sound less credible of what you witnessed,
right.
You know, just the slightest little slip up. And I never forgot that, because I did that, and he was absolutely right. This attorney was getting so wound about that style, you know, my answers. He just could not get he couldn't turn it into that Perry Mason moment or whatever. So it was something I never forgot. I think that's
through.
How they got to debate. They got to be like that in the debate, you know, because they are going to toss these things at them quick. So very critical.
I think if President Obama, if they would have allowed him to, and he could have, like, because there's a lot of states that are broke over this whole recession business. Because,
mm-hmm.
you know, people lost their houses and stuff, so there's not a lot of taxes in the communities to pay
right.
for the services,
mm-hmm.
you know, and that, you know, so he's got a good reason why he hasn't been able to, like, turn all this totally around.
Sure.
And it
and
takes
Phil,
time after good. Something like that.
I think so. Debbie, I've got some other callers pushing the button. Can I put you on hold here? I'll put you mute and hang in there as long as you can with us, since you're on the West Coast. And if I can work it in, I'll come back to you here.
Okay.
Debbie in Huntington Beach, thanks so much for calling in. And I see we've got a couple different area codes there in the studio. If you want to take part in the conversation, you've got something you want to add to it, push the number 1. Again, the call-in number 646-929-2495. Push the number 1. We'll get you on. And our old friend, the Piston Pilot, a.k.a. One Angry Jew, a.k.a. I think he's working on another name, too, Espresso Jew, if he gets his own coffee party.
Oh,
radio
I should
program.
Have my own coffee party show. I'm much too interesting to be left out of the fun, right?
Oh, I think so. What's on your mind tonight, sir?
April 1st, Russia Today. Here's an article. Federal Reserve lent to Gaddafi-owned bank. Here's the first sentence. When the financial crisis struck banks around the world, even Gaddafi's own, who came to the rescue? The United States Federal Reserve. So even when we were bombing Libya,
mm-hmm.
we couldn't let their banks fail.
Mm-hmm.
How you feel about that recovery thus
far? Yeah. How's that working for you?
So we're giving money to banks in Saudi Arabia. You didn't know the banks in Saudi Arabia needed money. Because the other part of the article says, for the first time, the Fed has been forced under great duress to release information regarding its lending practices. See, The Fed was just given carte blanche. Here's all this money. Go do what you want with it. Little did the people know that they sent a lot of the money overseas, which you never saw. I'm a little baffled by that. So we have people here who can't eat, who are on food stamps. Maybe they don't eat at all. We got people starving in America, and we're sending money overseas to banks. Banks.
We're sending money overseas to countries that don't need it.
Well, you regardless know, I mean, whether they need it or not, we need it more than they do, don't we?
Well, I mean, what you're talking about certainly isn't money being sent in the humanitarian mission. It's being sent to bolster up the financial the economic structure of a country that was definitely in chaos, I guess to say the least. How do you feel about our a country such as us that gives, you know, 5, 6, 7, 8 billion with a B dollars in subsidies to oil companies that don't need it?
Well, I'm more looking for the trillions that we that were stolen from us. Look,
sure, but I mean,
this country.
Do you have an opinion about what I just asked you, though?
Yes.
I mean, is that okay with you to give billions of dollars to the oil company subsidies?
No.
Okay.
The oil companies the United States of America is a fraud. The government of the United States of America is a fraud. George Bush was a fraud. Barack Obama, he's a fraud. Hillary Clinton, she's a fraud. Actually, let me jump off on the Hillary Clinton thing. I want to remind everybody, do you like Hillary? Do you think she's good?
Compared to what? I mean, I'm not
a big fan. Compared to a rapist, how's that?
Oh, well, I'd have to take Hillary in that case.
Okay. I'm going to remind you of Billy Dale. Do you remember Billy Dale?
No.
Okay, let me tell you who Billy Dale was. You know who Linda Bloodworth Thompson is? That name sounds familiar.
Yeah.
Linda Bloodworth Thompson is a Hollywood producer, a quite successful Hollywood producer, and also a friend of Hillary's. Linda Bloodworth Thompson's husband ran at the time, I don't know if he still does, but ran at the time when the Clintons were in the White House, a travel agency.
Okay.
Hillary Clinton, along with the, remember those FBI files that everybody was looking for? Hillary Clinton, along with the FBI, trumped up a whole bunch of charges and got the government to prosecute Billy Dale and people from his office. Billy Dale was the head of the travel office. The idea, of course, was to get Billy Dale out of the way and the rest of the people who were civil servants. I don't know if they were Democrats or Republicans. It didn't really matter. They served, I don't believe the president, but they served the press corps. So when the press corps needed to go with the president, they did all the travel arrangements. Well, Hillary wanted her friend, Linda Bloodworth Thompson's husband, to get that business. So they went after Billy Dale. Billy Dale was acquitted. It cost him his job, cost him his life, cost him his savings, cost him everything. Here was just a poor schlub who just happened to be in the right job. He didn't do anything wrong. He just happened to be in the job that Hillary wanted to give to one of her friends. So I always remember Billy Dale because no one else does. So anytime anybody brings up Hillary and how wonderful she is, I always remember Billy Dale. Look, we are a government of fraud. We fraud everybody. We fraud people around the world. When we go into countries with the IMF and all this, and here, borrow money from us. We're good guys. We'll lend you money. May I introduce you to Argentina, where the money in Argentina made that big whooshing, sucking sound that Ross Perot used to talk about and made its way into our banks here, with the people banging on pots and pans, banging on the walls of the banks saying, where's our money? And they said, well, you know, you went into debt. We had to give you austerity, and we gave the money to the Americans. The money disappeared into the IMF and to America, which is probably what's going to happen to us. I have said many times that we are going to follow Argentina because the middle class absolutely has a financial pistol pointed at it.
Mm-hmm.
And what happened in Argentina with people, you know, it's unfortunate because everybody in America thinks, well, Argentina, you know, a bunch of misfit third world, whatever. But Argentina is nothing like that. Argentina is the Europe of South America, or was. Mm-hmm. And the middle class right. disappeared. Middle class is living in the streets in tents. Did you know that?
No, I hear you. I mean, you know, and we're in agreement on several things here. What you've brought up, and I'm with you on a gun being at the head of the middle class in this country.
Yeah, but who's got their finger on the trigger?
The people that we've elected. That are supposed to be serving us.
Come on, Don. Say it. Obama.
Well, all of them.
Well, yeah, you're right. I mean, they are.
For the most part, I mean, you're sitting here, you know, calling Hillary a fraud and Obama a fraud and Bush a fraud. I mean, we can call
I am
probably
an equal
90.
Opportunity name caller, aren't I?
Yeah, you are. Yeah, you are. You had one Republican and a couple Democrats in there. But,
oh,
you
I
know,
could fill it in with Republicans
the,
more if you want. There's plenty of them.
It's like reach into this bag
and grab whatever, because whatever you pull out is going to be fraud. There's very few.
Yeah, the chances are you're going to get somebody. And, you know, when you say a fraud, literally the description of the word might not quite apply, but they're on the take. They're there for someone's interests other than the constituents that elected them. They're for themselves. They're for their pals. They're for their sponsors. But they're not for the American people.
If you're playing hide and go seek, where's the safest place to hide?
If you're playing hide and go seek, where's the safest place to hide?
Yes.
Where they'd never expect you to be, I suppose.
Well, where they already looked, right?
Yeah, you're right.
Okay. So where's the safest place to go in the world when right now they seem to have their set on America? They're destroying America right now. So where would be the best place to go? Some place that they've already destroyed.
Mm-hmm.
Like Argentina. Except Argentina, unfortunately, is sliding into a real problem with crime and whatnot. They didn't have that problem before, but they are starting to get it now. I know several expats who live in Argentina.
Yeah,
writers, and they left. They left and went to Argentina. Don't you think
it's no surprise that there's crime when your country starts to be comprised of a lot of people that are filthy poor?
Well, and yes, and these are people that didn't used to be poor. The middle class
right.
in Argentina was very much like the middle class in America. These were people who had houses, insurance, medical insurance, cars, car insurance. They lived just like we did. The only difference is they live down on the other side of the world. Their seasons are reversed, and they speak Spanish.
Uh-huh.
But Argentina is a very lovely city. The Buenos Aires is the Europe of South America. The architecture uh-huh. is very much like Europe. It's very old world. But they went in there and the IMF, and they destroyed the country.
Uh-huh.
And they destroyed the people. And the government of Argentina, if you watch, sold off the natural assets for pennies on the uh-huh. dollar. And they sold it to their friends. Which, if you think about it, this whole government takeover, like you're referring to the takeover of GM and some of these other companies, well, Argentina did the same thing. We are following in the footsteps of Argentina. And I'm sorry, I don't know who the lady was talking. I had just caught the last thing she said. But Obama's not hampered by anything. Because when somebody says no to Obama, yes, he's got the House of Representatives that he's got. That's an obstacle. But he seems to just say, well, okay, if you won't let me do it, I'll write a regulation. I will issue an executive order to do it.
Executive order, yeah. Well, he hasn't done that in, you know, in some very, you know, big deals. I mean, you know, he tried to get through the Jobs bill, you know, of his design or his team's design, that didn't go. You know, that was held up. Just recently, a bill that had to do with veterans and jobs, you know, that got shot down too. It looks like Eric is lit up here too, so let me get him on here. He might have
bring
a question
him on.
For you.
Bring him. Bring it.
Or a comment. Yeah, we'll see what's going. He may be wanting to go in a whole different direction. Eric, are you there?
Hey, Don, how are you?
I'm doing good. We're just scrapping together another night of open forum here, and I know you. It looks like you've been listening off and on, and we got the espresso Jew on the line with more interesting observations about where he thinks we're heading.
Yeah, well, could I call him Piston Pilot? I don't know if I want to call him.
You've got to call me Jew, Eric. Everybody does. And that's the and that's the funny thing, because everybody gets real comfortable. Jew this, Jew that. It's wonderful.
Well, I don't know. You know, I've heard the word Jew used in negative ways.
And it wouldn't be any surprise it was directed at me. I get a lot of negativity, too. People don't like me. I say things people don't like.
You know, since we're just doing all kinds of historical tangents, I want to give one that is from Hawaii, where, by the way, I didn't really know very many Jewish people growing up. But it's just a little tidbit of interesting history about Hawaii and why some of the same stereotypes and negative feelings directed at Jews are directed at the Chinese of Hawaii. You know, as with most colonizations, the idea was to take the natural resources away from the native people and then to begin exporting goods to the empire. And so sugarcane fields were, and pineapple fields, these plantations were a big part of the Hawaiian economy. And the idea was just to kind of basically put the Hawaiian people to work on these fields, but because they brought smallpox and other diseases, the Hawaiian people were not enough of a labor force. So they actually began to import Chinese laborers and even breed them. And there are to this day many Chinese Hawaiians in the islands. I'm half Chinese, so I was especially keen to this. Today in Hawaii, the word for Chinese is pake. P-A-K-E, pronounced pake, and it also means stingy, avarice, hoarding money, or being someone who maybe might not pick up the check at lunch or dinner. And here's the historical background. So the Chinese were the first to become these indentured servants who worked on the sugarcane fields and the pineapple fields. And, of course, the plantations were owned by these, quote-unquote, missionaries who said that they came to the islands to do good, but, of course, ended up doing well, very, very, very well. And they it's strange how they used race. They would have Portuguese immigrants as the Lunas, and these were the people who basically were the foremen of the plantations. And maybe understandably, the stereotypes in Hawaii to this day for Portuguese is that they're stupid and they don't understand things the way that all of us probably feel about our bosses. The Chinese, though, because they were the first into the plantations, were the first out. They were able to earn their freedom as indentured servants, and then they began to occupy the economic niches of a growing economy, and they became merchants and, you know, laundromats and restaurants and all of those things, and actually they actually did very well. But because of the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882, and this was passed because there were far too many Chinese for comfort on the mainland in America, Chinese there also had been brought over to be railroad workers, for instance, now that we no longer had the free source of labor from slavery. But then there were suddenly too many of them, and so we had an anti-immigration hysteria campaign similar to what we have today with Latino immigrants, and we passed some laws similar to what we're doing today, targeted at Latino immigrants, but these laws were specifically at Chinese. And so these plantation owners could no longer bring Chinese people in to work. And so basically they all those Chinese laborers cycled out of the plantations, occupied these economic niches, and the population today is only 8 or 10% of Chinese Americans in Hawaii, but they're all quite wealthy, several generations doing quite well. What they did is they then brought in Japanese and Filipino and Korean laborers to work in those sugarcane fields, and because there was no exclusion, there's larger populations, especially of Japanese and Filipinos today, and the largest of all is the Japanese community in Hawaii, and you guys probably guessed that because of the senators and the representatives that we see in Congress, many of them war heroes who fought in World War II. So anyway, there's two reasons why I think the stereotype of Chinese is that they are stingy or mean about, you know, how they deal with money. And one of them is just in the same way you don't like your boss, and so you call him stupid. You know, people look at people who, you know, are doing well financially, and they come up with stereotypes that are negative that have to do with money. But then the other reason is because the Chinese people were a minority and still are a minority because they weren't allowed to immigrate to the United States until the 60s, when we struck down these kinds of racially targeted immigration laws, or we thought we had anyway. There's a lot more Japanese people there, so Japanese and other people, I think, the majority populations, they're the ones who have the luxury of creating stereotypes. Here's the other interesting thing. In Hawaii, there aren't really a lot of clear stereotypes toward Japanese people because they're the majority, and so they're sort of like white people are here in the mainland. It's just a normal thing to be. So if a white person blows up an Oklahoma City federal building, for instance, we don't have a hysteria campaign about white people being terrorists, but obviously that isn't the case if a Muslim person or even a Korean person commits a crime. The stereotypes only seem to work if there's a majority people to apply them to minorities. So anyway, since we're going on tangents, I thought I'd share that one.
Mm-hmm. I agree with you about the, when you use the Oklahoma City bombing, you know, you didn't hear the word terrorist much with Timothy McVeigh, the guy that... Eric Rudolph, I think his name was, that blew up a few abortion clinics, killed a few people. I think he set the bomb at the Olympics park, back here years ago. Then went on the run. They finally caught him up in the hills in Kentucky or whatever. Another case of a white terrorist, but really not described as such. So, yeah, interesting observation.
Do you really want to go off on a tangent with the terrorist thing?
What are you going to take us down that road?
Sure. Well, why not? Look, in the time of Bush, prior to and after 9/11, after 9/11 especially, the word terrorist was used hundreds of thousands of times by every politician until Obama took office and the word terrorist was dropped out of the lexicon.
Mm-hmm.
Prior to Bush's second run at presidency, we had that color-coded terror alert, remember?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Do you know when that disappeared?
When Obama took office?
No, the day George Bush took office the second time.
Is that right?
Yes.
Yeah.
As soon as he was elected again, after the election, that terror thing was never used again. Mm-hmm. And we were constantly bombarded with the, well, we're in yellow mode, we're in orange mode, we're in some mode. Terror, 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 terror. Somebody did a YouTube video where they put together, I don't know how many hundreds of politicians, and all they were saying were the words terror. It was just flipping from one face to another. where they were using the word terror. Giuliani was quite prolific in the use of the word.
Oh, yeah.
Terror. Okay.
Yeah.
And what's the Jews' theme? Fraud.
Mm-hmm.
Did we really have terrorists? Did we really have terrorists that perpetrated 9/11? I don't believe it. How about you? Do you believe it?
Well, they called them terrorists, but you know, that's a label. I mean, they.
Do you believe 9/11 was perpetrated by 18 Saudis and one Egyptian?
Well, I don't think that they perpetrated it. I think they carried it out. I think they were part of a
larger
group.
I don't believe they carried it out.
Yeah, and I think you've voiced that opinion here before. And
it's a fraud. I don't know that I've voiced it here, but I'm going to voice it now. It's a fraud.
Mm-hmm.
And the fraud is designed to get you to do something you wouldn't normally do. Well, maybe give up some rights, allow the government to grow and grow and grow. And why are we in Afghanistan? Why are we in? We're still in Iraq. We haven't left Iraq. We just don't report on it. But why are we in Afghanistan? And I don't believe that 19 guys with box cutters did 9/11. And I've got I come at it from two different perspectives. I'm not an architect. However, I am a pilot. So I know a little bit about aviation. I've got hundreds and hundreds of hours flying airplanes. And I don't believe these guys did in the airplanes what the government tells us they did.
Hmm.
Give me an example. I'll give you an example. Let's just talk common sense.
Okay.
You have an interview in Boston, a job interview. It's very important. This is a career breaker or maker for you. And your interview is at 8:30 in the morning in Boston.
Mm-hmm.
Where are you sleeping that night? The night before. You're not from Boston, but tell me where you're going to sleep.
Well, I'm going to sleep as close to that interview location as possible.
That's right. That's common sense, right?
Mm-hmm.
You wouldn't decide for whatever reason to sleep in Maine and take a commuter flight at 6 o'clock or 6 something in the morning for an 8 something flight in Boston or an interview, for that matter, would you?
No, I probably wouldn't take that chance.
No. But apparently Muhammad Atta, the mastermind of 9/11, did. The picture you see of him going through the airport wearing khakis and looking very relaxed was taken in Maine, not Boston. He slept in Maine. Does that surprise you?
That's interesting.
You're going to hijack an aircraft at 8 something in the morning, and you've got box cutters, weapons. We even worry about going through security twice. You go through security in Maine, and you go through security in Boston, and you make a connecting flight because you know that you can rely on the commuter airlines of America because they're always on time.
Mm-hmm. Well,
sounds a little incredible, doesn't it?
Well, it's a little bit
odd.
It's a little bit odd. Are you saying that you don't think he was on one of the planes that flew into the towers?
No.
You don't think
he was? I think he was on one of the planes that went west. I don't think he was on the airplanes that hit World Trade Center 1 or 2. I don't think he even knew that he was going to die that day. I also think that in the confusion when they landed all the aircraft, remember that when they landed all the aircraft and any aircraft that wasn't in our airspace that had fuel to make it to, say, Canada, was sent off to Canada. Every plane was landed. They cleared the airspace of planes. I think that they landed the aircraft that the people claim hit the World Trade Center 1 and 2, landed them at military bases, took them off and killed them. That sounds incredible, doesn't it?
That sounds pretty incredible.
However, I'm not saying airplanes didn't hit the Twin Towers. Airplanes hit the Twin Towers. We saw them. The question is, what kind of airplanes hit the Twin Towers? See, from a pilot's perspective, you can't. It would be nearly impossible to hit the Twin Towers in a 767 traveling at 400 knots at 1,100 feet above the New York City skyscrapers, with the sun beating down on the street, sending up convective. You have air that's heated that rises, so you've constantly got things would be impacting on the airplane. The airplane couldn't stay true, meaning that you couldn't hit the building, because any movement that you made at that speed would send the aircraft veering off into hundreds of feet, maybe thousands of feet off course. When newbies fly, do you ever fly in a small airplane?
Yes.
Are you a pilot?
No. I've flown with a pilot, sitting next to me, at his controls, but I'm not a pilot.
Did you let you fly?
Yeah.
And when you flew, did you over-control the aircraft?
Oh, sure.
See, that's what people do when
I had a hard time holding altitude. I had a hard time holding altitude.
And I'm going to tell you why you had a hard time. You had a hard time holding altitude or staying in on a course because you overcorrected. You turned the yoke in one direction, and then when you realized that you were off course, you turned it in the other direction, but you overcorrected in that direction too. So you sort of chased your tail, so to speak. Same thing with the altitude. You start losing some altitude, you pull up. But a pilot who is proficient is going to be very careful on the controls. Is going to use those controls very gingerly. But you, being an amateur, you're going to sort of manhandle the aircraft if it doesn't respond very well.
Mm-hmm. But
imagine flying a 767. And you've never flown a 767. I find it unbelievable that I could be told that these people who've never flown these aircraft before could fly these aircraft so well.
Well, were they not supposed to? Got a second here. I want to give out the number again. 646-929-2495. Call in, push the number 1 if you want to get on and chat. We got Piston Pilot, or affectionately known as Jew, just telling us about his 9/11 truther theories. And Debbie in Huntington Beach, I'm going to come back to you in a second and see if you have any comments about it. I want to ask you one, or I want to throw something out here where you say that somebody that's never flown that plane before, and granted, I don't have any information that any of these people that were allegedly at the controls had flown before, but had they not attended flight school?
Yes.
So they had a leg up on me. They had a leg up on me because I had no flight school training.
Well, you would think so. You would think that that's true. However, these pilots, they were pilots. They had a private pilot certificate. They also had an instrument rating, meaning that they could fly by instruments without looking out the windows. Mm-hmm. And they also had their commercial certificate. They had gotten all those certificates within months of each other. And yet, somebody like Hani Hanjour, who we were told flew a plane into the Pentagon, tried to rent an aircraft from Freeway Airport, which I've flown into many times, and the people at Freeway wouldn't rent him an aircraft because when they went out to fly with him, he was so bad. So he couldn't control a 172. And yet somehow, this man who's got 3 ratings, he had to have flown. Either he got the ratings fraudulently and the government gave it to him, or... But he had to fly with somebody if it was done properly. But he couldn't fly 172.
But then they said that he was terrible. But I, you know, the way I understood it, and you know, we can talk about this a little bit more. I'm going to go back to Debbie here for a second too, but and then we've got area code 702. You're going to be coming up here in a minute. You know, I understood that these guys in these flight schools that were more paying attention when it came to actually flying the plane. They didn't care about taking off and landing. They weren't all that much attentive. And,
well, okay, let me answer that. They had a private pilot certificate. You don't get a private pilot certificate unless you fly. One, you've got to do the coursework. You have to have so many hours of flying. You have to have so many hours of solo flight. So how did they not land if they were doing solo flight?
Well,
what kind of planes
did they get their certification in though when they flew?
172s, Archers. I don't know if they flew. I'm not exactly sure exactly.
Are those twin engine turbo? No.
They are single engine, about 160 to 180 horsepower, four seaters.
Yeah. So they're just friggin' puddle jumpers.
Could you land a puddle jumper?
If I had to.
Well, you might land it very badly. I can land one. Look, the difference between when people are handed the yoke in the air and say, "Here, you fly it," and they go, "Wow, you know, this is not that difficult." Well, okay, try to land.
And try to maintain altitude without seeing a horizon.
But conversely, try to. If somebody does a takeoff who doesn't know what they're doing, you can kill yourself real quick.
Yeah.
Taking off an airplane.
Yeah. Okay. I'm gonna get back to you here in a second. Espresso too. I'm gonna go back. I got a couple, two or three lines lit up here now. Maybe somebody has a question.
Let me answer something real quick, because somebody put in here that the Terror Rainbow thing was phased out in 2011. I didn't see nor hear from the Terror thing that Terror Rainbow, you know, we're in old condition yellow and whatnot, that disappeared after Bush got elected again.
I'm not sure that it was totally taken down. I remember hearing about them not making the announcements unless it was going to get up into the orange or the red or something, you know, that they were getting off the kick where they were saying it was green or blue or whatnot. I mean, it was ridiculous. But I don't know officially when that thing went down. I guess, you know, it's something that we could look up. I'm going to go back to Debbie for a second. And hang in there, though, sir, because we'll probably be coming back to you here, I'm sure, with these other lines we got lit up here. So hang tough. I'm going to go back to Debbie for a second and say, Debbie, we covered a lot of territory since I first talked to you. Did you have any comments or anything you wanted to toss in there or a question for anybody?
Well, I'm not a pilot, but I think that we were targeted. I don't think it was our government who did it.
I have a tough time biting off on that too. So, it's probably something we could do a whole program on, you know, if we get enough people in on it. Hang in there, Debbie. I'm going to take a couple of these other calls. We've got two people call in now. I'm going to go to 702 first. 702, you're on. This is Don. Who am I speaking with, and where are you calling from?
Hey, bro, it's me, Steve.
Hey, Steve, what's happening, man? Down in Vegas, what's up?
Yeah, nothing much, bro. I just heard you guys talking about some conspiracy theories.
Well, that was Espresso Jew, a.k.a. Piston Pilot. You know, he's of the opinion that, 9/11 was a bit of a conspiracy other than what, we've been told about it. I don't fully, like I said, it could be a subject for another program because, there's a lot of things been flown out there about it, no pun intended. But I personally, don't think that there was like explosives loaded in the Trade Center, or I don't think there was government in on it. But he's got some points he makes to kind of at least raise an eyebrow. Did you have an opinion one way or another on that?
No, what I believe is them people died on that day, so that's why we went to war that day. then people were killed. It might seem so hard to believe, that these people that came from the Middle East ended up coming to America, ending up learning how to fly a plane, and it's super difficult. He's right. It's super difficult to fly a plane. It's extremely difficult, even with the turbulence and everything, you know? But, hey, it did happen. They did go. They did put that plane into that building, and that building did go down. It's all that's here, right there. And, yeah, that's what I believe in. Also,
more than those two buildings went down. I mean, you know, there were other buildings in that complex that went down too, and there's, you know, controversy about that also. Hey, Steve, how's things going down in Vegas with your work? Are you still working with the campaign?
Yes, I am. It's always a struggle when they're against you, but it makes me stronger as a person doing all the things that I'm doing, and I'm helping my community as being one of the youngest people there helping on the community. There's a couple of 16-year-olds, 15-year-olds, and I be telling them always, it's always good helping your community. It's better being here than being out on the streets doing something stupid that a lot of these kids do be doing. And it's humbling to be there, but as I said last time, they're against me because they don't like where I come from. They don't like that I'm from the ghetto, and also that I don't have a high school diploma or I didn't go to college. They hate me for that because they went to these private universities, these best schools, and they always put me down because of that. But that makes me stronger. That makes me more harder for Barack Obama, going door to door asking people for his vote.
Mm-hmm. Now, in all your travels there, you know, you mentioned some of these other, you know, younger people that maybe were, you know, maybe you hung out with or you know, friends of yours from the street. Have you, do you think that you've had any of the people that, you know, you hung out with that were maybe a little bit on the wrong side of the track that are starting to kind of like straighten up and try to, you know, try to go the straight arrow path? Any success stories there?
I talk to them every day. Every time I see them, I talk to them about doing the good path instead of robbing, stealing, coming up on cars. We need to stop doing that because it's foolish. It's foolish of us taking somebody else's whip, somebody else's ride. It's sickening to me, and I try to communicate to my friends, telling them that that's not the right way to be. That's not the right way to succeed in America, because you can't succeed just stealing cars, because sooner or later you're going to get caught and you're going to spend time in prison, and that's going to destroy your life, because prison ain't no game. It's serious stuff in there. And that's why I always tell them this. I always tell them it. I always tell them there's a right path and there's the wrong path. Which one you're going to choose? That's what I always tell them. You know, and right now I got my friend Brian. I got him into the Obama campaign. He's working too. You know, it's one by one I'm going to try to get my friends, but sooner or later this campaign is going to be over, and they're going to keep on being in the street. So after that, I don't really know what I'm going to do. But what I'm going to do is go help my community some more. And I know one day I'm going to get to the top and have a lot of power, and I know I'm going to be killed for that, because every single person that's been killed did something for their community that helped them. John F. Kennedy, Martin Luther King, Malcolm X, they were all killed because they wanted the right path. And I know one day they're going to kill me the same way, you know, for trying to have my people in the streets, my homeless people that are sleeping on the floor every single day. I'm going to try to help them. I'm going to try to give them a home, you know. I'm going to try to make these universities for free, so you don't have to pay, because this should be for free. Education should be for free, because we live in the land of the free, so it should be for free. That's just how I feel. I don't know.
Yeah, that'd be nice if that could work out that way. I kind of doubt it will happen in my lifetime, or maybe even yours, because you know, the way it is right now, I mean, they're trying to get education for profit with you know, charter schools and a lot of other things just being you know, passed over into the private ownership, even prisons, you know, corporate run prisons for profit. So you know, it's tough to stop a good thing like that when it's lined in somebody's pockets. Hey, Steve, stay on the line there, and we only got about 35 minutes, but I do want to come back. I'll make another run on you here in a second, in a few minutes. I got another call in here, too, that I want to take. So hang in there, Steve in Las Vegas, one of our in fact, one of our first show we ever had, Steve called in, and we've had him check in off and on through the last 6 months, or however long it's been since the program started, and he's come away as a good kid, trying to make something of himself down there, and from the streets of Las Vegas. Going to a Skype number, I guess, because all I got is a bunch of ones here. This is Don. Can you hear me? And if so, who's this and where are you calling from?
Hey, how's it going, brother?
Good.
Hey, my name is Lamar. I'm calling from Brooklyn. Let me just tell you about that. Hey, I just want to say that brother that I just called beforehand, you know, he's right. And what it really comes down to is that Barack Obama needs one thing right now, and that's, you know, doing good for the black man. The black man needs a lot of support and everything. I'm going to tell you right now, I think that the white man is the devil. The white man is evil and everything, man. We got to demolish the white man. I mean, I think you're evil, too.
I think you're evil, too, man.
You're trying to keep a brother down, all right? Don't be bullying that bullshit about, like, oh, man, you don't want to help the black man. You don't know what the black man through anything, all right? Fucking cracker. Man, you're a cracker.
Yeah. Okay.
Yeah, you're a cracker.
All right, bud.
That's right, you white devil motherfucker.
Thanks a lot for calling and making a fool out of yourself from coast to coast. Another guy that gets to play with Skype and woke up on the wrong side of the padded room today. So let's see, we got everybody lit up here still and possibly on standby or in a holding pattern. We'll go back to the piston pilot, aka
I think you should do a whole show on 9/11. Let me wet your whistle on 9/11. I raised an eyebrow. Let me raise the other eyebrow.
Okay, here we go. I love the way that you catch all these little nuances.
I don't miss anything. The morning of 9/11.
Nothing gets by the Jew. I got you.
I like when you say that. The morning of 9/11. The United States was doing 4 military drills. Were you aware of that?
Well, I mean, is that uncommon?
The scope of this was, yes. The two airports, the two Air Force bases that covered the airspace for both New York and Washington, D.C., sent their planes, not all of them, but sent many of their planes west and to Canada. So the Air Force bases that did cover the airspace that day was over 100 miles further than it was any other day of the year. The morning of 9/11, they were doing drills, and they had the military tied in to the drills where they were putting fake blips on the military radar. So if you listen to the conversation between the military air traffic controllers, when they realized that they had a hijacking situation in progress, the air traffic controller said, right, that's the drill. No, this is real. Wait a minute. You're saying it's real or it's the drill? They were confused.
Mm-hmm.
Minutes, seconds were wasted. In fact, didn't you wonder how we didn't get to scramble anybody into the air that day? Meanwhile, all of the flights flew over military bases, all of them, right over the top. And somehow, we weren't able to scramble one single jet. The two jets that I forget if they went out of Langley or they went out of Patuxent in south of Washington, D.C., they weren't sent to Washington, D.C. They were sent over the Atlantic Ocean to find what?
Yeah.
There was nothing out there.
Okay, but if I remember, wasn't there some talk at the time that there was possibly some international flights that were coming in that they were concerned about?
No, they were concerned about flights that they knew that had dropped off the radar. When an airplane turns off its mode C transponder, that means that the blip still shows up on the radar, but you can't tell what altitude they're at. There's a device in every airplane called a mode C transponder. So when you get a flight and you're a commercial flight, you're given a four-digit code. You put that four-digit code into this instrument, and then this instrument tells air traffic control, here's the four-digit code, here's the altitude that you're at, here's the direction you're flying. When you turn it off, all they have is the blip on the screen. They don't have a direction. They don't have an altitude. They don't have anything except they can see a blip. They know where you are relative to the ground. All of the aircraft that were claimed to be hijacked turned off their mode C transponders.
Right.
And the air traffic controllers were confused that morning. Look, the government came out and said to the American people that we never envisioned anybody flying aircraft into the World Trade Center or any other building. You remember that?
Well, I remember hearing that, but I also remember hearing otherwise.
Condoleezza Rice said it. Condoleezza Rice said it. She came out and she said, we never envisioned that anybody would even think of flying aircraft into building or using aircraft as weapons.
Okay. Yeah, well, I think that's BS.
Keep that thought for a second. Do you remember the X-Files, the series?
Sure.
Okay, were you a? Did you also remember the Lone Gunman? Remember them?
The Lone Gunman.
The Lone Gunman were the kind of quirky computer guys that would break into computer
systems that helped Fox Mulder.
Yeah, that's right. Mm-hmm. And they spun off initially into their own series, The Lone Gunman.
Yeah,
let me tell you what the first episode of The Lone Gunman was, the pilot episode. Ready?
Mm-hmm.
6 months it aired prior to 9/11. The pilot episode shows, I think it's Byers was his name, he was the kind of normal-looking geek of the trio, with his father, who was a government spy, on board an aircraft. And, of course, the other two, the geeky ones, are saying, hey, you know, you guys are in big trouble. That plane is under remote control. Well, that's ridiculous, of course. But then they go up to the cockpit and they break into the cockpit, and of course the pilots are all upset and don't believe them. And then when they realize the first officer tries to disengage the autopilot, he finds out he can't disengage the autopilot. The plane is indeed under remote control. Guess where they're flying to?
New York.
The World Trade Centers. They are destined to hit the World Trade Centers. So, according to Condoleezza Rice, that had never been thought of. But the people who wrote The Lone Gunman didn't get that idea by themselves. They got that idea from the government. They got that idea from their contacts within the government, who gave them the idea for that story. That was the pilot episode of the Lone Gunman.
Wow, and did that ever air? Did that air before
9/11? Yeah, it aired. Yes.
Wow.
Six months prior to 9/11.
Okay,
it might be 3 months, but it was several months prior to 9/11.
Right.
That aired. Point that I'm making is all these things, I look at 9/11 as a day of coincidences. How many coincidences can you believe without raising both eyebrows? See, because the London bombings, the 7/7 bombings, and by the way, everything I tell you, you can look up and find out I'm telling you the truth. The morning of the 7/7 bombings, did you ever wonder why you never saw a video of the bombers going into the tubes? London has cameras everywhere, right?
Right.
Mm-hmm. Why didn't we ever see a video of the quote-unquote terrorists bringing their bombs into the tubes?
Well,
I have the answer.
Okay.
Because the entire closed circuit television system in London failed just at the time of the bombings and came back on an hour or two afterwards. According to the British government, they could not have any surveillance because all the cameras failed. You believe that?
Hmm.
Let me give you another coincidence. A gentleman by the name of Peter Powers, who used to work for Scotland Yard, creates a company called Visor Corporation. Visor Corporation, as I think the, on their webpage, and he put it, they advise the Metropolitan Police on security matters. Visor Corporation, led by Peter Powers, their CEO, were doing drills that morning. Seeing a pattern here?
Mm-hmm.
Let me tell you where they were doing their drills. And you can look up Peter Powers, BBC, London bombing, and you will get a video of Mr. Peter Powers giving an interview to the BBC, where he says to the BBC interviewer, "When I realized that I had picked the exact same locations of the bombings for my drills that morning, the hair on the back of my neck stood up." What do you think the probability of Mr. Peter Powers randomly picking the, I think it was three or four exact locations of the bombings, meaning the two bombings and the one of the bus on the street. What do you think the probability of him being able to pick the exact location and have 1,000 of his people in the tube stations ready to do their drill? And he said, "We went from simulation to real world in 5 minutes. And it's a good thing we were there too, because they helped so many people." Meanwhile, in New York City, they're doing drills as well. In fact, FEMA is in New York City. But the funny thing is, FEMA to this day claims that they were not in New York City. Except Rudy Giuliani, when he gave his testimony to the 9/11 Commission, Rudy Giuliani tells the story about how they were looking for a place to set up their emergency bunker, because their emergency bunker was in Building 7. But they had gotten out of Building 7 early in the morning prior to any plane hitting it, because somebody pushed the fire alarms off in Building 7. So they all got out of there. Good thing, too, right? And when they went looking for a place to set up shop, they ended up in several places, a police station, but that was too small, couldn't house all the people. And then the story that Rudy Giuliani told the 9/11 Commission was, well, someone of my staff remembered that FEMA was in town, and they had already been tied into all the emergency circuits. They had already been tied into fire, ambulance, police, the whole bit. So we went to the FEMA on Pier 42, and they had desks and chairs all ready for us, and we sat down and went right to work. Guess whose testimony you can't find in the 9/11 Commission report?
Rudy
Giuliani. That's right. I found it. I found it on a PBS station, and I found the audio. And he did indeed say exactly that. That was his testimony. But he's the only person that you can't have written testimony, nor can you hear his verbal testimony. Everybody else, you can go to the website, you can find everybody else testifying who testified. It's just Rudy Giuliani just happens not to be there. But the similarity between the London bombings and 9/11 is that they were doing drills that morning in both places. And
you can't
just put 1,000 people in tube stations in London if two people congregate, they're all over you. So Peter Powers did it with permission. Well, I don't believe Peter Powers was in on it, because I don't think he would have given the BBC interview that he gave, but
sure.
He very clearly said, "Hey, you know what? I can't believe that we picked the exact same places. That's amazing."
Mm-hmm.
Well, statistically almost impossible.
That's wild. You did get the other eyebrow raised. And as you're talking about these terrorist things and whatnot, my memory banks got jogged, and I'm going to go to Eric, because he's blinking. He wants to get back in, so he might have something for you there, and what you've just been talking about. But here's something I'll throw at you, and I'm sure you're all up on this one too. Korean Flight 007.
The one that was hit by China. I'm not completely up on that.
Oh, okay. Well, read up on that one sometime. It's no, they were hit by Russia. Korean Air airliner flight 007 was hit by a
Russian
into Russian flight.
Territory.
Supposedly.
Or so we were
supposedly.
Told.
Supposedly. But the reason I started flashing on that is when you were talking about the drills, because there are theories out there that the Americans were in simulated dogfight activity off Japan someplace.
Yeah, I remember that. You're right.
That we might even have knocked this thing down. So
military drills are used for several reasons. They confuse everybody. The air traffic controllers on the morning of 9/11 were absolutely flummoxed because they didn't know what was a real blip on their radar or it was a simulation blip, because they were tied into whoever was running the drill. You remember Cynthia McKinney? Congresswoman Cynthia McKinney out of Georgia.
No.
Cynthia McKinney was pushed out of Congress because Cynthia McKinney became a 9/11 truther, and she started asking questions. She, in fact, it's not my, I didn't make up the fact that we were doing drills that morning. You can look up Cynthia McKinney, Rumsfeld, or you can just look up McKinney, Rumsfeld, 9/11, and you will find a video of Cynthia McKinney asking Donald Rumsfeld who paid for the drills the morning of 9/11. And he doesn't say there were no drills of 9/11. He says, well, I have to give you this general over here, and he'll tell you. And the general Mealy Mouth, who I call him, gets up there and says, we're not exactly sure where the money came from, something or other. And she says, well, the last time you were before this panel, I asked you for that information in writing, and you have not provided it.
Mm-hmm.
So nobody's denying that. And just one more to throw at you, because you don't have another eyebrow to raise, but you would if you had the third eyebrow. The day before 9/11, do you remember that Donald Rumsfeld gave a speech at the Pentagon, a press conference, talking about the $3.2 trillion that they couldn't account for? Remember that?
Yeah, over in Iraq.
Not over in Iraq. I'm not sure where that money went. It went into the military something or other. But if you recall,
yeah.
Donald Rumsfeld, and you can find it on YouTube, he gave a press conference that said, we can't find $3.2 trillion. Not million, not billion.
Oh, okay.
Trillion. Okay? Trillion dollars. $3.2 trillion. But they had bean counters, accountants, trying to find out where the money went. We want to take a guess. Would you like to take a guess which portion of the Pentagon they were in?
The part that got hit.
That's right. Would you like to know where the other evidence was for this particular thing? Building 7. Building 7.
I was going to say
seven,
it wasn't
out. Building 7 was a spook house. Building 7 had the greatest number of spies and agencies in it outside of Langley, Virginia.
Wow.
So
You're going to have to save some of this eyebrow-raising stuff here, because, like I said, we could do like the conspiracy show, you know, and you can be the...
I don't even want to call it the conspiracy show, because I think the people that believe the government line, they're the ones that are believing the conspiracy. Look, there are 1,500 architects and engineers on the Architects and Engineers for 9/11 Truth website. Now, why would you believe one guy from NIST versus 1,500 architects and engineers who will tell you otherwise? When you said that you didn't think there were explosives in buildings in the World Trade Centers 1 and 2, why did World Trade Center 7 fall? Wasn't hit by an airplane.
No, I know. And I don't know if I'm not an architect, and I don't know if it was some kind of harmonic activity or what.
No, Eric, activity.
Hold on a second.
I'm not running.
I'm keeping you on. I'm clicking the button on Eric because he clicked back in here, and I think he's got something maybe he wants to ask, or he's got something to say. Eric, I'm sorry. Are you there?
I am.
Eric? No, very, very vaguely. You're on Bluetooth or something. Try it again.
Okay.
Well,
here you go.
Try me again in 10 minutes if you can't hear me now.
No, we can hear you.
That's better.
Oh, okay. All right, cool. Well, I won't go too far down the 9/11, whatever you want to call it. Just share that my sister was a federal agent at that time. Actually, she's still a federal agent. And she was stationed in Boston and was assigned to investigate the two planes and the hijackers who left from Boston. And my father was working for the Drug Enforcement Administration, still does. The building is across the street from the Pentagon, and he witnessed the plane hit the Pentagon. In fact, he was leaving a message for my mother when the plane hit the Pentagon. So luckily my mom didn't hear this until...
How big was the plane that your father saw?
Well, it's, you know, there's now video, so I don't think that part of the conspiracy theory is the one you want to go down. I know that there was...
I absolutely do want to go down there, and I'll tell you why. The initial hold
there's not video, though. I mean, there's video.
Yes, there is.
Security video.
Oh, wait. There is, and I'll put it in the chat room, there is a CNN video from that morning from, I don't know, maybe 20 minutes after whatever made that hole in the building. There's a report from Jamie McIntyre, who was a CNN reporter at the time, who quite clearly says there's no evidence of a plane hitting this building. There's no debris anywhere. There's no, the pieces that we see are small enough to pick up and put in your pocket. He didn't see anything. How does a 126-foot wide aircraft, we're told that a 757 hit the Pentagon, how does a 126-foot wide aircraft from wingtip to wingtip fit into a 16-foot wide hole?
Well, I just want to kind of steer it in a different direction and just try to understand where you're coming from, not necessarily in terms of how the story is stitched together, but
fraud.
I think
it's a fraud.
I think it's interesting that this is so appealing to you know, not a lot of people, but you run into people who really love these conspiracy theories, and you know.
No, I don't love the conspiracy theory, Eric. Do you know why it appeals to me? Because I can answer that question for you. 9/11 has been used. Let me just throw this out there. 9/11 has been used as the reason why I must give up my rights. 9/11, if I told you 10 years ago that in order for you to travel in the United States of America, a man with blue gloves would have to put his hands in your pants, 10 years ago, you would have told me I was crazy, wouldn't you? And yet today we accept this. Today we accept this. And the reason why we accept this is we're told that it's because of 9/11. That because of 9/11, we have to do this. And yet, while they're sticking their hands in our pants at the airports, they're not protecting the borders.
Okay. Doc, can I say something?
Yeah.
Okay. So, there are many conspiracy theories, not just about 9/11. I understand why it's a momentous event, and it did change a lot about America and a lot in negative ways. I think that, you know, many of us, we want to be individuals, and we don't necessarily want to be part of a history that is commonly shared by everyone. It's very tempting to be offered a history all our own, you know, and even to be, you know, you said that you're a pilot, and so you have some knowledge about flying, to feel like, well, my specific knowledge can allow me to discover a history all my own. I mean, I can relate to that because earlier in my career, I wasn't so much interested in what was actually happening in the world. I wanted to exist in a world of make-believe, and my films were scripted with actors, and I constructed these elaborate worlds with really deep psychological backstories that, you know, I made some pretty good films, and it was really rewarding because I didn't want to be, in some ways, I didn't want to be part of the world that everybody else was part of. I liked the idea of constructing a reality just for myself. And this is really the first time that I've spent a long time listening to this particular conspiracy theory. And
do you believe that what I said is not true?
Well, I'm not gonna venture an opinion on that.
Well, wait a minute. Why not?
Because I just don't want to hurt your feelings, honestly.
You're not gonna hurt my feelings. Everybody calls me the Jew. You don't have any chance. You don't have any chance of hurting my feelings. But what I'm asking you is, did anything that I say not happen? Was the United States government doing drills that morning? Was I wrong or right?
That I don't know myself. I need to look into that.
I have a listing of the drills that have been done across the United States over time.
Mm-hmm.
I'm correct. Did Muhammad Atta sleep in Maine or did he sleep in Boston, Eric?
Yeah, but that fact in itself doesn't throw all the other things.
No, and remember what I said to you. Remember what I said to you. 9/11 is a day of coincidences. How many coincidences can you swallow in one day?
Mm-hmm.
Building 7 fell to the ground at 5:20 in the afternoon. Wasn't hit by an aircraft. It did not sustain, it did not have damage done to it by the other buildings. Yes, World Trade Centers 1 and 2 fell on top of other buildings within the complex, but World Trade Center 7 was the furthest building from World Trade Centers 1 and 2. And oddly enough, at 5 o'clock in the afternoon, the BBC, which you can also find on YouTube, the BBC reported at 5 o'clock that World Trade Center 7 fell to the ground. And luckily, no one was killed because no one was in the building. And they had managed to get everybody out of the way before the building fell. And as the BBC reporter, her name was Jane Stanley, you will find that I am like an encyclopedia when it comes to this stuff. Jane Stanley, standing in the New York office of the BBC, is telling everybody on camera that the World Trade Center fell. Unfortunately, if you look over her left shoulder, you'll see the World Trade Center 7 still there. Didn't fall until 5:20. When it did fall, the BBC went off the air mysteriously. And the BBC admits that they did do that reporting, but they said it was a technical error. Now, let me see if I understand this. You report something before it happens. You report it accurately, and it hasn't happened yet. That's a technical error. You have another eyebrow you can raise?
That's something like that comment was not intended to be a factual comment.
Well, she is reporting that the building fell, and you can clearly see in the video the building is over her left shoulder.
Interesting.
Look,
interesting.
I don't make this stuff up. And I challenge you, women, and I challenge you, Eric, to blow a hole in anything I've said tonight. Everything is on tape. Everything is on the archive. You can replay it. I want you, if you are willing, and you won't hurt my feelings, I want you to blow holes in what I said. That includes the London stuff and includes the New York stuff.
Okay. Well, you gave me a bunch of interesting things to look up, that's for sure.
Don, I hope you do look it up. I'd love to hear what you find. I will just say that, you know, my father is an honorable man, and
nobody's saying your father wasn't an honorable man, but I'm saying something hit the Pentagon. But whatever hit the Pentagon, look, the initial hole was a 16-foot wide hole that went through all three rings of the Pentagon into the courtyard and blew out a 16-foot hole. You can find pictures of it. You can find a 16-foot hole on the inside and the outside. When the building caught fire and the facade fell, you see a 70-foot wide gap in the building. It's still not 126 feet. There is no damage to the building where the engines would have been. There is no damage to the building where the wings were. There is no damage to that building where the vertical stabilizer on that aircraft was. That's the tail in the back, which is about five stories high at the top of it. There is no damage to any windows, no damage to the stone, nothing. There is one hole in that building, and I will ask the question. I'm not saying that your father didn't see something. I don't think he saw an aircraft. He might have seen a missile, and he might have thought it was an aircraft. Either way, something hit that building. Something made a 16-foot wide hole. However, I'm a pragmatist. I'm a pilot. I know my aviation, but I also know physics enough to ask this question. how does a 126-foot-wide aircraft fit into a 16-foot-wide hole?
Well, I think, you know, if I were making a movie, I would definitely cast you. And I just want to say that I can relate to how intoxicating this pastime of the.
I didn't believe this when it happened, Eric. This was not something
I
came to.
I mean,
the moment it happened. Do you know what turned me? And let me tell you what turned me, because this, you would probably find this interesting. I believe the government story when it happened. A friend of mine called me that morning, a pilot friend, and we watched it together. And I asked him, I said, do you think you could fly an aircraft like that into the building that fast with that accuracy? That was my question at the time. But what turned me, I didn't think much about it because I never knew Building 7 fell. I turned off the TV at about 1 o'clock. I never knew it. And nobody ever writes about Building 7. There's no... Nobody writes about it. It's not even in the 9/11 Commission report. They don't even mention Building 7. Isn't that odd? I didn't find out 2006. Yeah, you can find a video of Governor Keene, who ran the 9/11 Commission, and he was asked why the Building 7 wasn't mentioned, and he said nobody lost their life in Building 7. We didn't think it was worth mentioning. Now, if that passes your smell test, you got, I don't know what's for, with the, you got to have a special nose to pass that one. Look,
I didn't know until
2006 that the building seven fell. That's what
hang,
got
hang tough. Hang tough. I've got one more caller I want to get in because we've only got like 7 minutes left. Just hang on. I've got your mic hot, Eric, too. I'm going to roll dice on this here. Flim Flam, it says, or Flim Flame. I don't know. This is Don. Who's this and where are you calling from? Hello. Flim Flam, you're on.
Hey, sorry, I had my mic muted.
Okay.
Hey, this is, my name's Chris. I'm actually calling from east coast of Canada.
Oh, hey, what's up, Chris?
Oh, not much. Just been listening for a few hours. Now. Actually, I guess about 45 minutes. But you guys have a pretty good show, and I've just got one little tidbit of information. I guess it's, you could call it evidence. Regarding the 9/11 questions, it's it is circumstantial, but for me, it's one thing that's very helpful in convincing people that don't even like want to believe like that the U.S. government could even do something like this. So, have either of you ever heard of Operation Northwoods?
I haven't. Have you?
Yes. Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
So
can you give us a 1 minute update on
yes.
what that is?
Yeah,
yes.
I'll do it very quickly.
Okay.
In 1962, when the U.S. government was essentially looking to invade Cuba in order to get rid of the communist Fidel Castro, they like some higher ups in the internal government,
Admiral Lemnitzer, who was on the Joint Chiefs of Staff.
Yeah, he was one of the originators of it. They essentially came up with an idea for a series of false flag attacks. So essentially they were going to make it look like Cuba attacked them. And they came up with all these different scenarios and these ideas for ways in which they could simulate an attack, make it look like the U.S. had suffered serious grievances against, you know, from...
Can I jump in on this, though?
Yeah,
let me jump in on this.
Yeah, but make it very quick
Operation,
we're running out of time.
I know you are, but give it to you in 30
seconds.
I
want the guy to have a chance to talk.
I'm going to give it to you in 30 seconds. Operation
okay.
Northwoods, the culmination of Operation Northwoods was that a aircraft was to be chartered, which would have students on it. It was to have FBI agents and CIA agents instead. The aircraft was to fly over Cuba on the way to another country, maybe Venezuela. The aircraft would rendezvous with another aircraft, which would be a military aircraft, painted exactly like the civilian aircraft. The civilian aircraft would land with the CIA and FBI agents safe. The military aircraft would be flown remote control over Cuba. It would put out a distress signal, and it would be blown up over Cuba. John F. Kennedy said bullshit to that and didn't want it. And told Lemnitzer that he was not going to do anything like that. But that was the culmination of it. A remote control aircraft was to be flown over Cuba and blown up. Sound familiar?
Yeah, Chris, does that sound pretty accurate? To what you're gonna
Well, that is actually one of the many scenarios that they had proposed. The idea was to actually inflict real damage. They wanted to have some simulated victims, like mock victims, and they even planned mock funerals for them. But they also wanted some real victims. And then they wanted to bring the media in afterwards and get essentially in the written, like, because the documents have since been declassified in 1997 as the result of the investigation into JFK's assassination, funny enough.
Mm-hmm.
But so you could find all this. But they literally said, we want to get the population angry enough to invade Cuba, and we want to have something to say to the world, essentially. Well, you know, they committed these crazy acts of terrorism, so now we have to flatten their country and own it, essentially. And so this was back in 1962, and he's right. Like, the Joint Chiefs of Staff, everybody who needed to sign it, signed it. They were all good. They were set to do it. The only person who didn't want to do it was JFK. And so that's why it didn't
happen.
Because
JFK was a real patriot.
Yeah, I mean, I don't think that he was moral at first. I think that he was kind of seedy and corrupt, but I think something in him changed
but
towards the end.
He was a patriot. He was a bit of a lech and everything else, but he was a patriot.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, you said that about Clinton too. I mean, I don't hold his
I don't know that
sexual.
I would call Clinton. I don't know that I would call Clinton
a
patriot. JFK.
No,
was
I know
patriot.
That, but I never got all that fired up about him, you know, having a little tryst in the Oval Office with somebody other than
I can forgive JFK for all of that because JFK at his core was a real patriot, and at his heart, he wanted to protect and abide by the Constitution and protect this country.
That's true.
Right.
I agree.
Tell me your email, Don, and I'll send you a copy of Operation Northwoods. And if you got any eyebrows, if you got any eyebrows left, they're going way over your head.
Okay. Well, only because we're now going into archive mode, so we're not going live over the internet anymore. So the only people listening are ones that are already on the line here.
No. Wait. Your archives. What happens now still goes into the archive.
Well, yeah, I realize that. I'm just saying, but we're not going out live on the internet right now. Just
people
only are listening.
Who are on
so,
the line are here.
So here's my email address. Okay, it's Don M. And 52 is donm52@gmail.com. And hey, Chris in Eastern Canada, I'd like to hear more from you too. If you want to drop me an email and give me a little info on this, this is the first I ever heard of this. I'd like to read up on it. And then Espresso
Chew. Listen,
I want you to read up a little bit on the conspiracy theories, we'll call them that, on Korean Flight 007 and see what you...
Sure.
Once I get your email address, I'll send you some stuff, yeah.
I'm gonna send it to you right now, but if you remember that we were doing drills that day, and I think you're right, I remember hearing something like that, and you'll find that on a lot of these things, we're doing drills right alongside the real stuff. And it even goes to remember that guy that ran into the IRS building in the small plane in Texas, I think it was?
Sure.
The fire department was doing drills across the street.
Yeah.
That's true.
It's just wild. That's wild.
So they were there already set up to put out fires and whatnot. How convenient.
Definitely. Okay, great. I'm looking forward to your email. As always, Jew, entertaining and informative and controversial and thought-provoking. Hopefully you'll be back next Monday with more of your gems.
Set up a show that you want to do, and we'll hash this whole thing out because I am a walking encyclopedia. Look, I don't want to be, but...
Okay, I'll tell you what. After all the hubbub with the elections dies down, let's do that. We'll do that. That'd be great. And Chris, I would invite you to, if you would drop me an email and we'd stay in touch. I'm going to put in the plugs for our other shows. And Jew, we'll talk to you next week or maybe electronically via email, but we'll definitely be in touch. As always, a pleasure. I just want to remind everybody that our programming for Coffee Party Radio, it goes something like this, starting with Sunday. You've got Jessica English with her program, Bottom Line, and West Coast Time. That's on in the afternoon around 2. I think it's 5 on the East Coast. And then on Mondays, you have yours truly here with Speaking of America. And we are 8 o'clock on the West Coast and late 11 and on the East and Eastern Canada. And Tuesday during the afternoon, it's the Middle Ground with Eric Beiler and Michael Charney. And Eric, are you still there? What time is Middle Ground West Coast time?
8 o'clock, 8 o'clock Eastern, 5 o'clock Pacific.
5 o'clock. 5 o'clock. Great. 5 o'clock, yeah. For Middle Ground, and that's Michael Charney. He's our kind of our resident Republican, and so he's given us his viewpoint on what's happening. And then on Thursdays on the West Coast, she's in Portland. Janine Loudon, one of our original board members of Coffee Party, she has her show Lunch with Loudon. And then on Saturday, on the East Coast, Politics Done Right. I believe that program starts, Eric, is it 3 East Coast time, noon Pacific?
It's 1 East Coast, 10 Pacific for Egberto.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. I was way off. Okay, 10 on the Pacific, on the West Coast, 10 o'clock on the Coffee Party Radio, Politics Done Right, with Egberto Willis, 1 o'clock on the East Coast. So that's our those are our 5 programs that we have scheduled right now. We're working on some others, and just keep listening to us. Eric, thanks a lot for helping out and chiming in tonight. And everybody else, next Monday, hope to have you on. Thanks to Debbie in Huntington Beach and the Jew, a.k.a. Piston Pilot, Steve in Las Vegas. Steve, you still there?
Yeah, I'm still here, man. Them conspiracy theories.
That got a little wild. Well, I think it got wild enough that I think we might do a show on that. maybe more than one, because I'll say one thing. I don't know if I buy into everything, but he's got some got some questions there that seem to need a little bit more answering. But, Steve, I want you to check in with us next week. I want to hear what you have to say about the debates. Are you going to have a group of people together tomorrow or Wednesday night to watch the debate?
Actually, we do. We have a whole event going on to go watch the debates on Wednesday. So
okay,
it's
great.
Be a good time.
Awesome. So I'll be wanting to hear what you have to say about that. And I think we just lost Steve there. I got some static, so sorry about that. Hey, everybody, next Monday night, 8 o'clock, West Coast time, tune in to us again. Speaking of America, this is Don, and I'm glad to have you on board tonight, and we'll see you next week. Chris, still there?
Hey, yeah, I'm still connected.
Okay, hey, thanks a lot for calling in. I had a little trouble with your mic there and getting you hot, getting you on the air. There's something a little bit fluey in my studio switchboard here. So I hope you can dial us in next Monday. And did you catch my email address?
Actually, I missed... I did miss it, so just give me one second here to grab a pen. I'm definitely going to tune in next week to you guys, so
yeah,
rest assured.
Yeah. Okay, cool. I really appreciate you listening in. The first time you've had somebody, I think, tell me they're calling in from Canada, so that's cool that we're getting out to you.
Yeah, I certainly pay a lot of attention to American politics. It's I think that you guys are really... really influential nation, so what's good for you is good for me.
Yeah, I hear you. I hear you. You got something to write with there yet?
I do, yeah. Go ahead.
Okay, sir. It's Don M. And then the number 52. It's donm52@gmail.com.
Is that Don as in the morning or Don as in D-O-N?
No, Don, D-O-N, that's my name. Don, my name's Don Manning. So it's D-O-N and then M like Manning, like Peyton Manning and Eli Manning, the quarterbacks. And then the number 52,
at gmail.com.
Don M 52 at gmail.com. Drop me a line, and we'll try to put together a program with a lot of these questions. You know, I'm really looking forward to checking out this Operation Northwoods thing. Flabbergasting. Yeah, that's
it
amazing.
It's scary and heavy stuff, but it's the kind of place that you have to go if you want to know everything, right? So. I think we could both agree that the government isn't always honest with us. So
that's for sure.
The real question becomes how far.
It sure makes me queasy and kind of sick to my stomach though to think about the government actually endangering and actually taking lives to further an agenda of their own citizens and not in a wartime situation. So I mean that's sick, but I guess that's what power and money and greed can do. So
yep.
I really appreciate you calling in. I look forward to communicating with you and having you on again.
All right. Thanks very much. I appreciate it. And you have a really great show, I must say.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you. And are you going by this handle, Flim Flam? If I see that come up, that's you, huh?
Yeah. I'm going to send you an email from chris_briand@hotmail.com. So, and I may just make a new Skype with my actual name. So.
Okay, that's cool. All right, well, I look forward to talking to you again, Chris. Thanks a lot.
All right, thank you. Take care.
All right, bye-bye now.
Bye.